Caractacus and Arviragus did not linger in Rome, but they returned to Britain, and with Arviragus went his Roman wife, Venus Julia, daughter of Claudius. All were faced with an unpleasant situation. Cloacius, in conducting the war against his in-laws, that is unpleasant. Caractus against his sister and brother-in-law, and Arviragus opposing his father-in-law, the Emperor Claudius. This is better than dynasty. Who's that witch in dynasty? No, Joan Collins, the actress. Who? You doing watching them when I'm on? I'm innocent. I didn't know her name. What Claudius and the Roman Senate had underestimated was the unbending temper of the Britons. He was quickly to learn that it was an impossibility for the British to make any compromise where their religion was concerned. Ostorius Capula had replaced Plautius, and the war continued for another 7 years. Finally, after many bloody battles, the British under the Pendragon Caractacus met disaster at Clun, Shropshire, A.D. 52, by a strange... Boy, that's a town. Shropshire. Shropshire. Hark, I heard a pistol shot. You heard that story. Shropshire. So we had a streaker in here for a minute. Disaster at Clun, Shropshire. You say it. Shropshire, A.D. 52, by a strange trick of circumstance. Caractacus was not outmaneuvered in this latest battle by the one General Scapula. He opposed four of the greatest commanders in Roman history in this action and more. Up to this point, things had been going badly against the Romans on the field of battle, as shown by the fact that the Emperor Claudius himself, with heavy reinforcements, came to Britain to support his generals in the field, which climaxed the action at Clun. Opposing Caractacus in the Claudian campaign, in allied command with Aulus Plautius, was the great Vespasian. Remember Vespasian? One of the Caesars. Future emperor of Rome. His brother and his son Titus, who a few years later was to put Jerusalem to the torch, destroy its inhabitants. How many of you knew about Vespasian and Titus fighting in Britain? You've been taught real well. They really teach good history. Vespasian opposed him. Future emperor of Rome, his brother and his son Titus, who a few years later was to put Jerusalem to the torch. And in the 60... Well, that's another subject. Destroy its inhabitants and scatter the survivors of Judah over the face of the earth. Added to this illustrious military assemblage was Jeddah, the conqueror of Mauritania. As matters became desperate, an urgent appeal for help was sent to the Emperor Claudius. All them birds were losing. So they sent for Claudius. He hastened to Britain, taking with him the 2nd and 14th legions with their auxiliaries and a squadron of elephants. He landed at Richborough, joining his other generals on the eve of the Battle of Clun, personally directing the battle, which saved the day for Rome. It took the combined military genius of four great Roman generals, together with the emperor himself and an army that vastly outnumbered the British to bring about this victory. This in itself is the greatest tribute that could be given to the military excellence of Caractacus, the valiant British warrior. It was a disastrous defeat. Not only was Caractacus captured, and I will tell you from other sources and read it to you, not on the field of battle, but by treachery from one of his own people. But his entire family was taken as hostage to Rome. I will also tell you that the British generals continued after Caractacus was captured and the Silurian kingdom was never defeated. This battle was lost. The whole family of Caractacus was taken as hostage to Rome. It was the most complete subjection of any royal house on record by an enemy. The British triads commemorate the event as follows. Quote, "There were three royal families that were conducted to prison with the great-great-grandfather to the great-grandchildren without permitting one to escape." Arviragus and his family were not numbered among the captives. More successful than his cousin Caractacus in making his escape at Clune, he reorganized the British army and carried on the war against Rome for many more years. Among the captives was the wife of Caractacus and his daughter Gladys. A different Gladys now. Because Gladys meant princess. As well as his brother, who had remained on the battle scene to receive the terms of the victor. Caractacus had been urged to flee so that he might later continue the conflict. However, fate was against him. Caractacus sought sanctuary from Aricia, queen of the Brigantes and grandniece of the treacherous traitor Mondubratius, who acquired infamy during the Julian War. By order of the traitorous queen, Caractacus was taken prisoner while asleep, loaded with irons, and delivered to Ostorius Scapula to be numbered with the many other royal captives and shipped to Rome. Tacitus, in his Annals, Book 12, Chapter 36, writes that the news of the capture of the famed British warrior sped like wildfire throughout Rome. The scourge of Rome had been caught. The event was received by the people with greater jubilation than had climaxed any other Roman conquest, including the victories of Publius Scipio when he brought Scipius to Rome in chains, and Lucius Paulus, who led the proud Perses into captivity. He further states that 3 million people crowded the streets of Rome to view the captive British king, and the Senate convened to celebrate. Another Roman historian wrote, quote, "Rome trembled when she saw the Briton, though fast in chains." What had this great barbarian chief achieved to cause such a sensation among the high and the low of the conquering empire? Why was he so feared that people trembled and shrank from him as he passed by helpless in irons? Why did they not dispose of this barbarous Christian leader according to their usual custom? In those 9 years of conflict, Eutropius reports in his Roman records that 32 pitched battles were fought with victory swaying from one side to the other. The British annals report that 39 pitched battles were fought. Is there any wonder, as Tacitus remarks, that people from all parts of Europe poured into Rome to gaze upon this valiant warrior who had so seriously decimated the crack Roman legions in combat? The record further states that Caractacus, heavily chained, walked proudly with his relatives and family behind the chariot of the emperor through the crowded streets of Rome. With this scene before us, we can cease to wonder at the series of startling events that transpired from the beginning of the famous trial onward. On the day of the trial, Tacitus tells us that his daughter, Gladys, refused to be separated from her father, though it was against the Roman law for a woman to enter the Senate. Voluntarily, she walked by the side of Caractacus up the marble steps into the Senate, brave and composed as her father. The report continues, the Pendragon stood before the emperor. Full chest, a noble figure, fearless, calmly defiant, unconquered in spirit. The Senate was crowded to capacity, and here again we note another breach of Roman law in the presence of another woman. History tells us that the great Queen Agrippa sat on her throne in the far corner of the dais, a fascinated witness to the most famous trial in Roman history. The man who should have been the most hated as the leader of the Christian army drew admiration from all sides as he stood poised before his sworn enemy, the Emperor Claudius. Such was the fame of the gallant Christian Briton Caractacus. As the trial proceeded, he spoke in a clear voice, trenchant with the passion of righteous vigor, as he vindicated the rights of a free man. He replied to his prosecutors with words that have lived down through the ages. Probably it is the only episode in this great Christian warrior's life that's remembered by posterity. Free men the world over may read his epic address with pride as the pen of Tacitus worded it. In the words of Tacitus, the Roman historian Caractacus addressed the Senate saying, quote, "Had my government in Britain been directed solely with a view to the preservation of my hereditary domains or the aggrandizement of my own family, I might long since have entered this city an ally, not a prisoner. Nor would you have disdained for a friend a king descended from illustrious ancestors and the dictator of many nations. My present condition, stripped of its former majesty, is as adverse to myself as it is a cause of triumph to you. What then? I was lord of men, horses, arms, and wealth. What wonder if at your dictation I refuse to resign them? Does it follow that because the Romans aspire to universal domination, every nation is to accept the vassalage they would impose? I am now in your power, betrayed, not conquered. Had I, like others, yielded without resistance, where would have been the name of Caradoc? Where your glory? Oblivion would have buried both in the same tomb. Bid me live. I shall survive forever in history. One example, at least, of Roman clemency." Never before or after was such a challenging speech heard by a Roman tribunal in the Roman Senate. It is the one solitary case in history, spoken by a Briton vibrant with courageous conviction of a free man. This noble address was once the proud oration of every British schoolboy. Now, like the songs of Tara from Ireland, heard no more. How chiefly today Christians hold this cherished heritage. For many years, students of Roman history puzzled their brains seeking a reason or motive that caused the Emperor Claudius to render his remarkable verdict. Why, they asked, did not Claudius demand the customary Roman revenge? The pages of history are full of their brutal triumphs, the dragging of their unfortunate victims behind chariots, trampling them to death under the feet of elephants as they were forced to lie prostrate along the Avenue of Triumph, thrown to the starving lions in the arena, torn apart on the rack, strangled, burnt, or confined to the horrible pit of the Mamertine, where they went stark, raving mad. Did the strange intermarriages between the princely Britons and Roman aristocrats, which was also to penetrate his own family, induce Claudius to make this extraordinary decision? Historians definitely declare to the contrary. Emphatically, they affirm that the Roman law was so embedded in the conscience of the Romans, they would not think, let alone dare, to avert traditional ruling. Nevertheless, there and then, by order of the Claudian tribunal, Caractacus, with all the members of the royal Silurian family, were immediately set free. As the decision was rendered, we are told that the whole Senate applauded loudly. and the famed Queen Agrippina rose from her dais, approached the Pendragon and his daughter Gladys, shaking hands with each according to British fashion, then embracing them according to the Roman. This display of emotion was another strange deviation from custom. The only restriction imposed in the pardon of Caractacus was that he must remain at Rome on parole for 7 years, and neither he or any member of his family were ever to bear arms against Rome. To this Caractacus agreed, and never once thereafter did he break his pledge. When he returned to Britain 7 years later, even though wars was then raging between Britain and Roman, led by the unrelenting Arviragus, Caractacus and his family remained aloof, honor-bound. While he remained in Rome, he enjoyed all the privileges of a free man. With his family, he resided at the Palatium Britannicum, the Palace of the British, which was soon to become world-famous in Christian deeds and history. A son had been permitted to return to Britain and rule over the kingdom of the Welsh Silurians in the stead of his father. During the 7 years of parole, Caractacus was allowed to receive regularly the income from his British estates so that he and his family might continue to live in state as befitted a royal household. Why Claudius bestowed such generous clemency upon the royal Britons, knowing full well he could never force them to recant their faith, is something which cannot be reasoned in material form. A greater influence was at work, in which all these characters were but pawns on the divine chessboard, moved in their actions by the inscrutable will of the Almighty, as the astounding events that follow prove so clearly, with St. Paul and this branch of the Silurian royal family holding the spotlight at Rome. That's the family in their 7-year parole that brings us to the visit of Paul and the book of Romans that's referred to in the 16th chapter of Rome and the last chapter of Paul's letter to Timothy. Is God in control?
Yes, sir.
It's been a long story, but I don't think ever before gave it quite in that detail to you. His daughter Gladys will marry a Roman senator. Which said Roman senator is the son of Paul, the apostle's own mother, being so greeted in Romans 16. That powerful family became the base of Paul's work in Rome, and the base from which the other secret, well guarded, of Paul's visit, and the reason why he would visit Britain, occurred. But that's another story. How many of you knew all this? History has been called his story. The historian writes it his way. Now you're all bored to death, aren't you? Well, will everybody get on the phone and say, "I will never tell you that teach again"? Quite so long. Now, you be on Hope Street on Sunday. You got that?